forbade the consideration of two subjects about which I feel deeply, and which I propose hereafter to treat with what strength I possess. For much thinking over my experience as a private in the Army of the Potomac has confirmed me in the belief I then entertained that the two capital errors in the conduct of the war on the Union side were, first, the calling for volunteers to suppress the rebellion, instead of, at the outset, creating armies by drawing soldiers ratably and by lot from the able-bodied population between the ages of 20 and 40 of all the free states and territories. Second, the officering of the commands in the various armies with West Point graduates by preference, on the assumption that they knew the art of war and were soldiers, and were therefore the fittest to command soldiers. It is my purpose in the future edition of this book to show how the resort to volunteering, the unprincipled dodge of cowardly politicians, ground up the choicest seed corn of the nation, how it consumed the young, the patriotic, the intelligent, the generous, the brave, how it wasted the best moral, social, and political elements of the Republic, leaving the cowards, shirks, egotists, and moneymakers to stay at home and procreate their kind. How the Lexingtons being away in the war, the production of Lexington colts ceased. Again, I carried out with me from the ranks not only the feeling but the knowledge derived from my own experience and from the current history of the war, that the military salvation of this country requires that the West Point Academy be destroyed. Successful commanders of armies are not made. Like great poets, they are born. Men like Caesar, Marlborough, Napoleon, and Grant are not the products of schools. They occur sparingly in the course of nature. West Point turns out shoulder-strapped office holders. It cannot produce soldiers. For these are, as I claim, born and not made. And it is susceptible of demonstration that the almost ruinous delay in suppressing the rebellion and restoring the Union, the deadly failure of campaigns year after year, the awful waste of the best soldiers the world has seen, and the piling up of the public debt into the billions, was wholly due to West Point influence and West Point commanders. They were commanders, but they were not soldiers. Frank Wilkerson. Recollections of a Private. 1. From Barracks to Front. I was a private soldier in the war to suppress the rebellion. I write of the life of a private soldier. I gloss over nothing. The enlisted men, of whom I was one, composed the army. We won or lost the battles. I tell how we lived, how we fought, what we talked of o' nights, of our aspirations and fears. I do not claim to have seen all of Grant's last campaign, but what I saw I faithfully record. The war fever seized me in 1863. All the summer and fall I had fretted and burned to be off. That winter, and before I was 16 years old, I ran away from my father's high-lying Hudson River Valley farm. I went to Albany and enlisted in the 11th New York Battery, then at the front in Virginia, and was promptly sent out to the penitentiary building. There, to my utter astonishment, I found 800 or 1,000 ruffians, closely guarded by heavy lines of sentinels, who paced to and fro, day and night, rifle in hand, to keep them from running away. When I entered the barracks, these recruits gathered around me and asked, "How much bounty did you get? How many times have you jumped the bounty?" I answered that I had not bargained for any bounty, that I had never jumped a bounty, and that I had enlisted to go to the front and fight. I was instantly assailed with abuse. Irreclaimable blackguards, thieves, and ruffians gathered in a boisterous circle around me and called me foul names. I was robbed while in these barracks of all I possessed, a pipe, a piece of tobacco, and a knife. I remained in this nasty prison for a month. I became thoroughly acquainted with my comrades. A recruit's social standing in the barracks was determined by the acts of villainy he had performed, supplemented by the number of times he had jumped the bounty. The social standing of a hard-faced, crafty pickpocket who had jumped the bounty in, say, half a dozen cities was assured. He shamelessly boasted of his rascally agility.